at me with that eye, but but the rest are, I think you're familiar with us. If there are new faces within yourselves, you will do that. Not unless you want us to really tell us who we are. You know us by now. So, Mr. Mini, if there are some that are to be introduced, it's fine. We'll allow you to do that. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Clarence Mini. I'm the new chair of the Council for Medical Schemes. I was appointed in November by the Honorable Minister of Health. I've come here with our team from Council. At the far end, it's Ms. Wahida Khan, who's in risk and performance. I was going to do part of the presentation. We've got Tembi Pasani from complaints adjudication. Mr. Daniel Lehucho, our CFO, and Dr. Cabana, our acting registrar. First of all, perhaps I should address myself to the fact that we are here. We are here because when we prepare this APP, we interact very closely with the Department of Health and Treasury, and we bring it here for approval. That is why we've come down here. And two, Chair, you realize that we still call Dr. Cavani an acting registrar. The Minister of Health came to the CMS offices 2 weeks ago to update us about what was happening in the sector and also to reassure us that he was going to quickly finalize the issue of the CEO and registrar of the Council for Medical Schemes. Without further ado, Chair, I'm going to hand over to Dr. Cabani, the acting registrar, to give the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Mini. Thank you, Chair, Honorable Chair and members. I'm going to present the annual performance plan for 2018-19 for the Council for Medical Schemes. Part of the presentation will be tackled by our CFO, Mr. Dan Lehucho. The contents of our presentation will cover the following areas. Basically, there's a part A, a strategic overview, which can be seen in the hard copy of the APP between pages 6 and 17, and it touches on the, you know, situational analysis, performance delivery environment, organizational environment, and legislative mandates. And then the main section will be part B, where we deal with programs and sub-program plans. And this will be found in the main hard copy of the APP between pages 26 and 54. What we have also added, Chairperson and honorable members, is basically the answers to questions that were presented to us in 2017. And these have been answered, and they are in the main APP document between pages 55 and 56. Now, just talking to the annual performance planning process, yes, there have been these interactions with National Department of Health, and changes and inputs have been incorporated into the plan, but there have been no major changes to the 2014-2019 five-year strategic plan. In terms of Part A, which is our strategic overview, Just a few comments here. I won't touch on the story of registrar and CEO, but I want to say that the Council for Medical Scheme is still operating under severe, you know, resource constraints. Our current budget is around $155 million, but we're regulating an industry whose annual contribution by members runs up to $163 billion. We believe that CMS needs to be restructured for purpose, and in this respect, you know, because this is our last of the five-year plan, we plan to do a proper planning, restructuring, and ensuring that we're able to carry out the mandate for the next 5 years. Yes, we do have a union since 2015. It's putting a bit of pressure on the organization, but we accept that as part of the, you know, the process. Our overall performance between 2014-15 to 2016-17 actually shows a gradual improvement against the targeted indicators. Again, looking at the internal environment, it is in our plans to make sure that where we have performed better, we maintain, and where we are still struggling, we'll improve. We are hoping to maintain our unqualified audit reports moving forward. We're looking forward to keeping our ICT systems uptime at more than 99%. We're also hoping to improve our recruitment and retention of staff, the turnaround times for complaints and clinical reviews. We're increasing our PMB, or rather the prescribed minimum benefit definition reviews, as well as the code of conduct, the increased stakeholder interaction, training and empowerment, and increased presence and awareness about the Council for Medical Schemes and its programs. We're also going to be increasing our turnaround times for our investigations and enhance our enforcement capacity. We're going to improve our turnaround times for registration and RULA members, and strengthen our legal compliance, reduce backlog of appeals, and improve our financial compliance. And we hope that that will be seen in the plans that we will present. In the external environment, the major developments here are around the NHI insurance implementation policy and its gazetted implementation advisory committees. We see CMS playing a key role in these advisory structures, and we've got specific activities that we're going to be focusing on in support of these. And these are the consolidation of options in schemes. Currently, we've got 322 options in 82 schemes. We want to standardize these to a manageable number so that members can make rational choices. We're also talking about providing a framework for consolidation of schemes with members that are less than 6,000 as the requirement by the Medical Schemes Act, and also the consolidation of government employee schemes, the alignment of the prescribed minimum benefits with the NHI single service benefit framework. There's also work that we are doing on the beneficiary registry, and this is aimed at registering all beneficiaries so that we can get a complete picture of both the public and private sector in terms of where members are and what their profiles are like. We are also going to be participating in the legislative and governance reform on the Medical Schemes Act, which we are informed is in the process of being processed through cabinet processes. When we look at industry trends, we are still concerned about what we see as a sustainability crisis, in the sense that the number of schemes are actually decreasing from 83 to 82 currently in 2016-17. Overall membership of schemes is also stagnant at 8.87 in 2016-17. Member contributions have increased from 151.6 billion to 163.9 billion. And there is an increasing inability by schemes in general to settle claims in line with the contributions without relying on the investment income that comes out of the reserves. In 2016-17, we experienced a total deficit of 2.4 billion before investment income. The number of complaints remain relatively high about schemes. So given this picture, CMS has got the intentions of intervening, you know, to try and reduce the costs overall within the sector. And part of the areas that we will be strengthening in this process is the recommendation that we recommend annually to schemes in terms of contribution increases. We also hope to accelerate the solvency ratio program that we have at CMS. But we're hoping to consolidate the risk pools, as I've indicated previously. And we're hoping that the recommendations that come from the health market inquiry that aim to regulate and make prices of healthcare services and goods sustainable, we hope we'll be participating in the implementation of that. CMS also wants to get into the area of combating fraud, abuse, and wastage in the industry, and this will be done in collaboration with key stakeholders. My machine is running out of battery. I'm not sure if we can be assisted.
Okay,
But we can proceed, Chatterson, whilst there. Thank you. Sorry, honorable members. In terms of whether our goals are aligned to the National Department of Health and the National Development Plan, you will see that in the hard copy of our APP for 2018-19, between pages 11 and 12, we give a detailed exposition of the alignment of the CMS goals with those of the National Department of Health as well as the National Development Plan. This slide basically shows the current structure of the Council for Medical Schemes. We've got the Council, which is our governance structure, the Registrar and CEO, and the 12 business units that reports to the CEO Registrar. In terms of the update of the situational analysis, what we do in terms of our legislative and other mandates is basically mainly to focus on interventions at policy level that we are doing jointly with the National Health Ministry. And some of these interventions will extend beyond the 2018-19 financial year. And these cover the areas of the National Health Insurance, the Health Market Inquiry, the low-cost benefit option framework, the beneficiary registry list, the prescribed minimum benefits review, the demarcation products, as well as the solvency framework. In the next 5 years, between 2019 and 2024, the CMS is proposing to enter into the following areas in order to improve its regulatory capacity and impact. That is the strengthening of a policy research and monitoring unit, providing more technical support to the NHI implementation committee, the implementation of whatever health market inquiry recommendations that are placed at our door, active involvement in combating fraud, waste and abuse, getting into cost intervention in the managed care environment, and some of these include looking at alternative remuneration mechanisms, as well as care coordination in order to reduce costs. We are also hoping to play a key role in the establishment of a national coding authority, because we've experienced a number of complaints that are relating to codes, which currently are residing with many players, and there's no regulatory framework that talks to that. We also want to play an active role in health technology assessments and interventions. In addition to that, we're hoping to act as a coordinator of medical health funding regulators within SADC, but we're also going to be coordinating with other internal regulators, particularly those in the health sector. So those are our broad goals and part of the vision for the next 5 years. Honorable Chair, and now I'm coming to the programs and program plans. And this is basically covered from page 27 of Part B in the hard copies of the APP. Basically, the CMS has got nine programs. Program one, which is essentially for administration, has got five sub-programs, namely the Office of the CEO and Registrar, Office of CFO, ICT and Knowledge Management, Human Resources Management, as well as Legal Services. Right, thank you. Now, the rest of the programs is we've got Program 2, which is the Strategist's Office, Program 3, Accreditation Unit, Program 4, the Research and Monitoring Unit, Program 5 is Stakeholder Relations, Program 6, Compliance and Investigation. Program 7, Benefits Management. Program 8, Financial Supervision. And Program 9 is Complaints Adjudication. Now, in terms of sub-program 1.1, this is basically the Office of Registrar and CEO. There are no specific operational indicators there, because CEO and Registrar is tasked with the overall efficient management of the organization. In terms of sub-program 1.2, which is the Office of the CFO, for 2018-19, we've set ourselves three indicators, and all of these are talking to the third goal, which is basically related to the effective and efficient operations of the organization. The first indicator basically talks to a promise of an unqualified audit opinion, which is the estimated performance for this current, for 2017-18, and we hope to repeat that. We're also aiming to have an annual performance information report that is reliable, accurate, and complete in the same way that we think we have in 2017. And then the last indicator basically talks to the production of strategic risk registers on a quarterly basis, and we hope to maintain that in the same way that we did in 2017-18. Sub-program 1.3 is the Information Communication Technology and Knowledge Management. Here again we've got three indicators, and these are talking to strategic goal number 3, which is basically still around the effective and efficiency in the organization. The first indicator talks to the uptime of the network and server at CMS. We hope to increase the uptime to 99% as opposed to our estimated performance of 97 in 2017-18. We also are hoping to reduce the IT incidents or security incidents to 0, which is currently our estimated level of performance. The third indicator talks to
the uptime of installed applications in the system, which we hope to maintain at 99%, as is the current performance. The fourth indicator there talks to ability to provide information as per request within 30 days. We're hoping to provide that 90% of the time, as opposed to our 80%, which is the current level of performance. Sub-program 1.4 is the human resources management, and has got five indicators, and all of these are also still related to the operational effectiveness and efficiency of the organization. The first indicator talks to maintaining the staff turnover at less than 10%, which is in line with our current performance. The second one talks about the turnaround time for the filling of posts, excluding that of the CEO, to 120 days, which is in line with our current performance. The third indicator talks to achievement of employment equity targets, which we had set currently at 5%, and we hope to repeat that. The fourth indicator talks to organizational efficiency and performance. With this indicator, I want to ensure that 100% of staff sign performance agreements within the deadline of 31st May as per requirement, and this is in line with our current performance. And the last indicator talks to performance assessments done biannually, which is, you know, 400% of the employees, and this is the current level of a performance already. Subprogram 1.5 is the legal unit, and has got two indicators that are also still talking to operational efficiency in the organization. And the first indicator talks to written and verbal legal opinions provided to both internal and external stakeholders. We've set the target of 200 for 2018 as opposed to the current level of performance of 190. And the last indicator is the percentage of court and tribunal appearances in legal matters. We want to maintain that at 100%. As is the current performance. Program number two is that of the strategist's office. It's got seven indicators. The first two indicators are talking to goal number one, which is basically around providing good quality access to medical schemes. And the second, the next four talk to goal number two, which is basically ensuring that regulated entities are regulated in line with the protection of members. And the last one is, it's an indicator that talks to goal number four, which is around the policy advice that is provided to National Health. With the first two indicators, we're hoping to maintain the benefit definitions that we do for the prescribed minimum benefits to 10, same as our level of performance right now. And then the second indicator talks to the prescribed minimum benefits review. In this coming year, we're hoping to provide a costed prescribed minimum benefit package, as well as the regulations that attach to it and the code of conduct. Because in the previous year, we've been busy with the development of a framework, which we will consult with the industry currently. The third indicator talks to, in fact, the next three indicators talk to how clinical opinions are going to be provided to complaints that have been lodged with the complaints adjudication unit. We are saying the standard simple opinions that are required will be put 90% of them will be done within 30 days. Those that are slightly more complex, which we call category 2, will resolve 95% of these within 60 days, and those that are much more complex will resolve 98% of them within 90 days. We are also saying that any email or telephonic query around clinical opinions will be resolved within 7 days, at least 96% of them. And it is just slightly above our current level of operations, which is at 95%. The next indicator talks to research projects that are supposed to support national health policy. We are promising to deliver 5 of these in line with the current performance of 5 research projects which we have delivered on. Program number 3, this is the accreditation unit and has got 3 key indicators, and these are talking to goal number 2, which is about how tightly we regulate the entities that we are responsible for. The first indicator talks to the number of brokers that are going to be accrediting in 2018-19, and the target there is 4,980. As opposed to 4,045, which we did in 2017-18. The second indicator talks to the accreditation of managed care organizations. We are targeting 25, which is 10 more than we did in the 2017-18 financial year. The last indicator talks to the accreditation of administrators. We're targeting 14 in 2018-19. As opposed to 8 in the current financial year. Program 4 has got 2 main indicators, and these are talking to strategic goal number 4, which is basically the policy advice that we provide to the health ministry. We've got an indicator that talks to research projects. We're targeting 8 in 2018-19, as opposed to 7 in the current in 2017-18. And then there's also going to be a trend analysis that we provide on an annual basis when we do our annual report. So we hope to maintain that. Program 5 talks to stakeholder relations, and all its indicators are talking to the regulation, that is goal number 2. The first indicator talks to the percentage member awareness that we hope to achieve through a survey. We're targeting 50%. About 2 years back, the results of the survey showed about 40.3. So we're hoping to improve that in the survey that we're going to do this year. We're also hoping to increase the number of stakeholder and training awareness sessions to 45, 25 more than the current level of performance. The next indicator talks to the annual report, which we deliver. And the last indicator talks to the positive or neutral feedback that we get in terms of our regulation using a media tool. We're hoping to maintain that at 75%, as is the current performance. Program 6 is the Compliance and Investigations Unit. All its indicators are relating to the level of regulation of the entities under our responsibility. And the 2 indicators are around how we deal with non-compliance cases. We're hoping to deal with 100% of those that will be reported to us, as is the current level of performance. And we are hoping to implement governance-related interventions in at least 85 entities that are regulated by us, as opposed to the current level of 82. Program 7, it's the Benefits Management Unit. It's got 2 indicators, and these are talking to the regulatory scope of our organization. The 2 indicators are talking to, the first one is about the interim rule amendments that we deal with on an ad hoc basis throughout the year, and we do that within 14 days. We are setting the target, which is in line with our current performance. And then in terms of the annual rule amendments, that need to be done before the 31st of December. We've set a target of 90% against the 100, which is the current level of performance. Just because we believe that as we implement, you know, the consolidation of options and schemes, that that will result in an increase in the number of rule applications, which will be more complex and perhaps requiring more time to attend to. Program 8 has got 5 indicators, and these are relating to our regulatory function. The first one talks about those schemes that are failing to meet the statutory solvency requirements. We want to make sure that we pay close attention to these, at least 100% of those schemes that fall into that category, as is the same level, you know, of performance currently. There are also those schemes who are in line with the statutory solvency requirements, but their solvency is decreasing at an alarming rate. We're hoping to put those under the radar, 100% of them, as is the current level of performance. We're also going to be doing processing auditor applications, and we're hoping to deal 100% with those that are presented to us. And then the last two are talking to the quarterly reports that we produce from this unit, as well as the annual report contributions. And these are stated in line with the current level of performance. The final program is the complaints adjudication program, program 9. It just has one indicator, and this relates to also how tightly we regulate the entities under our responsibility. We've set ourselves a target of 83% in terms of adjudicating all complaints within 120 working days. And this is an increase from our current level of performance, which is 79%. Honorable Chair members, this is where my part ends. I'll hand over to our CFO to talk to the budget and MTEF estimates.
I hope you are not going to be like the acting registrar. I think it's not friendly to IT. But the last time he pressed, he was on slide 22. He went on, but fortunately we had documents with us. Just on a lighter note, because that's what I've observed.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And Honorable members, we are presenting a budget that supports its annual performance plan. This budget was constructed on the basis of the National Treasury guidelines that were issued during the year. The guidelines were saying that we can only increase our expenditure by about 6.3% in relation to our year-on-year increase in terms of our overall budget, but on goods and services we can apply a percentage of about 5.7%, and the general cost of living adjustments to our employees of about 6.7% and 5.7%. So this is the kind of guidelines that we've built in determining this budget. Our proposed budget is about 164 million, and we wish we can have the billions. We wish we can have the billions. As we've indicated, if you compare this with the contributions of scheme in billions, I think this is a very small budget, and we wish we could have more and do more in terms of our vision. And I just want to underscore the fact that we're in our last year of our five-year plan. We will be coming back with a new proposed and a much increased budget given the vision that our new council is charting for us going forward in the next 5 years. And the levy we're proposing is an increase of 6.3%, which amounts to about 36 rands and 13 cents per annum per member, an increase of about 214 cents from last year's levy. This slide just shows the level of the levy trend for the last 5 years. If you look at 2014-2015 financial, we're charging each member of the medical aid scheme 27.80 cents. This year, the 18-19 financial year, the levy that has been proposed is about 36.13 cents per member per annum. In terms of our expenditure per program, as you can see, the 12 programs that our registrar has spoken to, in the office of the registrar, a total expenditure of about 5 million. Office of the CFO is about 19 million. It's 19 million because this is a support unit that carries a major expenditures related to your building insurances of the goods and services in the organization, as well as general maintenance of the building. And the next cost center that has got a higher percentage in terms of a budget is about 9.4 million, which is the ICT, which deals with our system, our IT system. As you're aware, that IT is an enabler of operations in this modern age. And this slide just shows percentages allocation in terms of our major expenses. Our salary bill is about 65% of our total budget, and the other expenses of about 33%, and our capital goes off about 2%. This slide shows in a graphic form what I've just said. 65% of our budget goes to our salary of employees, and we've got our lease payments. As you are aware, we are renting the building that we are operating in. That's also the second highest expenditure. Our legal fees also is another expenditure in terms of our ranking higher. Consultant fees also, and the computer expenses, as well as our capital goods. And the next slide just shows you the other expenses we are referring to here. We're talking about the donations that we normally do to needy organizations. We're talking about outsourced services like your internal audit services, the bank charges, exhibition costs, and I think the expenditures are listed therein. These are the other expenses other than the ones that we are saying are the major expenses of your salaries, the legal fees, and this supports our operations in our operations. The next slide shows the various occupational levels that we have at the CMS currently, just to support the kind of the salary bill we have in the organization. From top management, I think the issue of top management, the position of the registrar is still vacant. I think our chairperson has spoken to that. Currently, we've got 11 senior managers, and our professionally qualified staff of about 11, and our professionally experienced technical specialists of about 38, and our skilled personnel of about 52 personnel, and the semi-skilled of about 5, and unskilled about 7. On this one, I just want to elaborate on our unskilled personnel is our cleaners. In the past, we used to outsource the service of cleaning. We have taken them on board since November 2016, so those are mainly our unskilled labor force in the organization. But as you can see, the picture depicts much more professionally qualified employees in the organization. In addition to that, we have about 14 interns who we offer them experiential learning in the organization. As at the 31st March 2018, we had about 14 interns in various units, two in information technology, five in the strategy office, one in complaints, one in benefit management unit, three in our stakeholder relations, one in the office of the CEO, and one in the human resource management unit. These interns, as I'm indicating, are placed in various units with agreed work plans so that they can achieve some experiential learning. And at the end of the internship program, we provide reports to respective sitters so that they can use them in their when they are looking for jobs, and they can use that as point of reference because they would have gained some experiential learning in our organization. Chairperson, this is in short our presentation in respect of the budget that we will support this annual performance plan as presented by our acting registrar. Thank you, Chair. Presentation will be in relation to the complaints, which will be presented by our colleague, General Manager Tembi Paswane, in the complaints unit. Thank you.
Thanks. Good afternoon, honorable members. Mine is just to inform you briefly on the complaints that you received and resolved. It's just the statistics of complaints that you dealt with in 2017-18 financial year. We received 4,536 complaints last year, which amounted to 28% increase, 28.9 from the previous financial year. So the number of the increase in the raw data is 1017, which is an increase. What we've observed that instead of complaints reducing, the number is increasing exponentially, hence the 28.9% increase. The resolution rate there was 65% for the period of 120 days, which the balance of 54% was resolved outside the time frame of 120 working days. So the overall percentage included the rollover from the previous period, that is the complaints that couldn't be resolved in 2016 financial year. So after resolving complaints, we issue rulings which are binding to the parties, that is the medical schemes concerned, as well as members. However, what we do afford them the opportunity to appeal the decision that we made as an office so that the matters can be dealt with at the council level. So there's a committee that is appointed by council to handle all the complaints that needs to go to them for adjudication. The table at the bottom just talks to the time that we took in resolving those complaints, so it goes in different periods, which is, the first one is just the raw data at the bottom, then is the percentage thereof of the complaints. Next slide, please. And then what we observed in the complaints that we received, we saw that there are a number of complaints which shouldn't have come to the office, because you find that those members didn't have the benefits that they sought authorization or funding for, where members choose benefit options that really do not suit their health care needs. And they do so because it could be the issue of affordability, where instead of upgrading to an option that will cover whatever benefit that they need, but they couldn't do so due to affordability constraints. The second issue related to the lack of understanding of the nature and extent of benefits. That could be due to either the language that is used in communicating those benefits to the members, where medical schemes were advised that they could do more in order to simplify the rules of the medical schemes. But in certain instances, we found that there was a neglect on the part of members for not reading schemes material, which was sent to them, where there was proof that certain information was communicated to them relating to the limitation of benefits. On the other hand, you also observe some shortcomings in respect of the medical schemes in which they were conducting business. You find that if the medical schemes took time to go through the complaints that you've referred to them and those that were referred to the medical schemes directly, they should have done a root cause analysis so as to cap the recurrence of future complaints, because what they needed to do there was just to take corrective measures to ensure that whatever issues that were raised by members were corrected at the time. In certain instances, you find that there were no internal mechanisms available at the medical scheme to ensure that complaints are dealt with. So we inform them that they need to take responsibility of the complaints that are sent to them instead of telling members that if they are not happy with the decision that were made by medical scheme, they must just go to counsel for medical schemes for adjudication of their complaints. The third issue related to the benefits, which are not as clear. There were some clauses which are ambiguous in respect of that. But what we did as an office, we issued communication guidelines to inform the medical schemes as to this is the issues that they need to address because we've observed from the rules, so as to better communicate the benefits from the member, that they must be simplified. So the medical schemes have been given that task, that they need to clean the language that is in the rules of the medical scheme. We also observed that the communication that is sent to members, especially at the port of contact, that is call center now, that is a need for ongoing training. Because once call center staff has product knowledge, in that instance, they're able to clarify issues there and there when members are calling for assistance. The last issue that we've noted related to the performance management, that is the service level agreements that the medical schemes enter into with third parties that they are contracted with. You find that those entities do not act as per the performance clause of the medical scheme. So what you're saying that if the entity, that is the administrator in most instances, do not apply the rules or do not pay the benefits as provided for, then the medical schemes must take action, that is the board of trustees in that instance, to either terminate that contract or to impose penalties, because if they don't do that, members are affected at the end of the day, then they come to council and lodge complaints. Whereas if the board of trustees is involved to oversee the functions of the administrator, then most of the issues wouldn't even be brought to the attention of council for medical schemes. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Chair. And acting registrar of the Medical Scheme Council. There is the presentation, honourable members. Any questions? Honourable Ngonzo, Honourable Mapanga, Honourable Temekwayo, Honourable Adams, in that order. Honourable Wilson, and then Honourable Kopan. Honourable Ngonzo.
Chair, I want to contribute on program number 3. Accreditation and number of applications by administrators and self-administered schemes. The number as per budget is 14. Previously it was 8, 17-18 financial year. And the last 2 years before year 17-18, it was 14 and 13 respectively, which is consistent with what you see yourselves as a target that you could reach. Now, it looks like to me, if you had 8 in the year 17-18, there was a challenge. maybe I should ask that I be provided with that. You could talk to that, because you know, setting yourself a target of 14, when the past 3 years you had 8, 14, 13, or 8, 13, 14, that's consistent. But it looks like there was quite a challenge, you know, in that particular year. The next one is clarity on page 4 of the APP, where it says under situational analysis, where it says inability and in an increase in the inability by the scheme to settle claims, and it goes on the last bullet of the same page, and there has been an overall decrease in the number of member complaints. Now, the way I interpret it is that if there has been an increase in the inability by the scheme to settle claims, I would think there should be an increase in the number of member complaints, not a decrease. Maybe that we should get a clarity on that one. Next is wanting to know about the consultants, where in 2017, 7 million was allocated for consultants and 7.1 million was allocated for consultants in 2018-19, or is it yes, the following year, the following financial year. Just a clarity on that one. Or maybe the question should be the CMS, would it be able to provide details on the deliverables by these consultants? And what measures are in place to reduce the reliance on consultants? And the last two the committee previously raised concerns regarding the cost of leasing a building by CMS. Maybe we should hear the Institute CMS telling us something about that. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation and appreciate the fact that you guys always receiving the progressive results. With regards to your performance, I'm also convinced that in this current financial year, you will obtain the 100%. Chair, my question, it's on the observation, which is on the last page of the presentation. It's on page 42, to those ones who are having the cooked version of the presentation. My question relates to the members of the medical scheme. On the first bullet, it is indicated that members are members choosing benefit options that do not suit their health care needs. I just want to find out what is currently being done by the medical schemes to ensure that members choose benefits options that suit their medical needs. And also on the second bullet, I just want to check, how are you going to ensure that members understand the terms, conditions, the nature and the extent of their benefits? Lastly, Chair, have you conducted a research to determine why it is that members don't read the material or the statements? If so, what were your findings? If not, how are you planning to deal with this issue? I submit, Chairperson.
Honourable Adams.
Thank you, Chair. Let me welcome the presentation. Mine will be on page 35, expenditure per program. The highest expenditure there is in the office of the CFO and the legal service unit. Now my question is, it's just one big sum that's stated there. Is it not possible that you can make a breakdown? On the next page, on 37, the major expense items are there in percentage. I would like to see figures. Where do the CMC put each component under? And the other one is on page 38, say, other expenses. Where does this fall under as the budget stated it? Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Mine is in connection with page 6, the strategic overview updated situational analysis that deals with the increase the turnaround times for our investigations and enhance our enforcement capacity together with legal compliance and reducing backlogs of appeals, coupled with a number of information that was applied to us per different sub-programs wherein mention is made of different objectives about the turnaround time of complaints. Either be 90 days, any email resolved within 7 days upon receipt, and further on, the all complaints handled between 120 days. My question is, Acting Registrar and Tembi, there is a complaint from Previsha Pillay, who used to own 3 pharmacies, namely Main Pharmacy, Hill Street, King Edward Pharmacy, and Hill Street, right? Who got a letter from, let me just check, from Discovery Medical Scheme in on the 21st of May, 2014, that rendered her services. They just said, we will not pay any claims for services rendered from your practice. 21st May 2014. To date, it's April and it's 2018, and she sought some help from Council of Medical Scheme, but according to her, she hasn't got any response from the Council of Medical Schemes. And then obviously it means the scheme has suspended direct and indirect payment into her practice as it is. So she just wanted to know, when are you going to be able to act on this matter? That is number one. And secondly, I would like to ask you whether you are aware of this matter since management do change over time. And what is it that I say to her? And furthermore, she also mentioned that the CMS has mentioned that Discovery have contravened the Medical Scheme Act, and they have done an investigation into Discovery Health. However, they are not forthcoming with issuing the directive to them and giving me a reply to my complaint stating that they have indeed contravened the Medical Scheme Act, Section 59.2. Thank you.
Honorable Wilson, Honorable Ndaba.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'm covered in the main by people before me. I just wanted to confirm that in terms of the budgets, you only receive 5.6 million from the Department of Health. Is that correct? Although your budget is 164 million, you only receive 5 million from the Department of Health. Is that correct? So you've got to make up the balance through levies and memberships. Okay, it's quite a substantial amount to have to find, particularly when medical costs are at a situation where fewer and fewer people are actually going off medical aids because they can no longer afford it because of the current economic situation in South Africa. What is Plan B? Because you have a budget, but it's potentially going to diminish, so what is Plan B? And I'm just interested on your other expenses and your financial side. You've got rent, you've got operating costs for rent and property payments. What is the difference? Is one property owned? Is one property leased? Why have we got two properties? I just need to understand it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. You'll pardon me if maybe when I was outside, my question has been raised. Remember, Chair, I think I have one concern with regards to medical aid schemes. With regards to the questions that you have raised with them, there was a question, Chair, that we said, are the exorbitant increases in the contributions fair? And I see their response, Chair, but, you know, I have a concern. Because even when I was looking at the APP, I don't see anything that maybe they have programmatized on how are they intending to address this matter. Because, Chairperson, if you go and consult a specialist will charge you money that is more than the required standard. But I'm thinking, Chair, because when they were here, when we were raising most of these issues as members, I thought when they come back in this financial year, they will give us something that will make us to say at least they are doing something. But I don't see it in the APP. And medical aid schemes are, instead of decreasing those amount or being willing to change the prices that they are charging when you are consulting a gynecologist, a radiologist, or all the specialists, Chair. So I'm not sure why would we have CMS,
a medical aid scheme, of a department or unit or entity, which we are hoping as honorable members that maybe one day they'll regulate, you know, on how should specialists charge charge us, with how should they charge us, instead of them coming to parliament presenting issues and complaints which the beneficiaries of medical aids have raised with them, but they don't address it. What are they regulating? Why can't they take this matter very serious? Because all of us here, I don't think there's anyone who has never been affected by this thing. I was hoping this financial year they'll be raising something in the APP with any intention of them addressing this problem.
Chair, she already asked my question.
Honorable Mashale.
No, thanks, Chair. Well, mine is also related to what Honorable Nda was raising, but in the context, just to verify whether the entity has managed to give itself time to go through the high panel report that was produced last year. Because there are very critical issues that report is raising around affordability of medical care. And one of the issues that they are raising, for example, that the cost of healthcare services is key determinant in terms of affordability and accessibility of healthcare services, whether these are supplied in the public or in the private sector. And therefore, they are proposing that certain steps needs to be taken in order to address this disjunction that is currently in our system, especially around the issue of affordability. What CMS is supposed to do in order to address that matter from a point of view of playing a role of regulation, but also a process that might require an overhaul of the whole legislation that governs CMS. I'm not sure whether, as part of, as you prepare for this APP, have you looked at that report and begin to say, how do you begin to inform some of your work to begin to address some of the weaknesses that they've identified as a problem? It's not their own creation, it's what they've discovered when they were doing public hearings. And this is what people told them, who are beneficiaries to the system, what weaknesses, what are the challenges, which therefore your existence must begin to respond to that. But as Honorable Ndaba is saying, when you look at the APP, one doesn't feel that it begins to look into that matter. I just want to get that indication whether you did acclimatize yourself to this report that was drafted by the high panel that was led by the former president, Halima Mdlantli. Because there is a section that is dedicated to yourselves on this matter. And then the last issue, Chair, it's around the increase on the on the complaints. As you are reporting that there's been a substantial increase, What could be the reason behind the increase, and how are you mitigating against these issues that affect people as they, because it affects them, that's why there's a high increase. How do you come into that space and assist and make sure that you address those complaints, but at the same time, make sure that going forward there's very little, or there's a reduction so that you increase compliance and reduce complaint at the end of the day. Thanks.
No, thank you. Just the last one for myself. For me, is that in terms of the volume of your complaints, which schemes are, should I say, a culprit? Or which schemes are affected or complained about in terms of those complaints, so that we were able to really understand. I think we will we'll just have a comfort break of just 5 minutes, so that we allow yourselves to, and there's tea or the members.
I'm Or we can agree how
I'm going to go to the next one. Okay.
Can we be settled so that we start? In the next 2 minutes, we are going to start. Sorry to break your... Chairperson of the board and the acting registrar, how you will be responding to our questions depends on, as long as they are responded to, we're not going to prescribe who's going to start, who's going to respond on what. It depends on you. Over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members. I'll take the first bite at the questions, but I'll also refer a number of these to our CFO as well as our General Manager for Complaints Adjudication. The first question that was asked was around Program 3, the numbers that are targeted around accreditation. Let me just say from the outset that if you look at those numbers and try and make sense in terms of how those targets were set, will be difficult if you don't understand the background behind the numbers. And the background is, we know exactly how many managed care entities are out there. We also know how many administrators are out there, and we also know how many brokers are out there. The thing that makes it a tricky is that when they come for accreditation, it's for more than 1 year, and they don't all come on the same year. So it's a staggered kind of, accreditation process. So when we set the target, we actually look who is due to come back out of the old people to ask for re-accreditation, and we also anticipate those that are new, that may seek new accreditation, and we also factor those that may have left the market. So there's a lot of you know, variables that one takes into account. So those numbers were actually confident that they reflect the effort that we will put in those areas. The second question was around the increasing inability to settle claims versus contributions and the link between that and the complaints. Let me just perhaps apologize. If when we put the numbers between 2015 and 16, we seem to suggest that there was a significant drop in the complaints. I think we are just trying to show the pattern. But if you look at the number of complaints around it, they are still significantly high. And the reason why we put that in the situational analysis was just to demonstrate that crisis that we believe exists in the private healthcare-funded industry, where you've got schemes that are decreasing in numbers, members that are not increasing, the inability to settle claims out of contributions. Because to us, that whole picture paints unsustainability. But my colleague Tembi will look in detail in the manner that you asked here, that we look at the volume of complaints, you know, and what it is that we are going to do to mitigate against that. In terms of the consultants, I'll ask them when you respond to look at the numbers. But I just thought it was important to just underscore why CMS relies on consultants for some of its functions. Some of the work that we do at CMS, like the prescribed minimum benefit review, requires clinical experts and specialists. We need their input in order to be able to review and do the definition work. So because it's a project type of work, we are not inclined to hire these specialists on a full-time basis to continue to do this work, but we hire them, and once the definition is done, you know, and we've paid them, because definition work just takes a few weeks, so we hire and use them as and when we need them. But other areas is, for instance, in complex legal cases, where we do specific investigations, the people that we pay for curatorship and other services. Now, if the question is asked, do we want to continue in this pattern? If, for instance, our budget is increased, there are certain services that we can insource here. But that would need, you know, the budget to accommodate these. Because then, you know, instead of just paying them for on a project-to-project basis, we'd be able to afford to pay them on a full-time basis. I'll also ask our CFO to deal with the leasing costs and the issues around the buildings. I'm also going to ask the general manager complaints adjudication to deal with the choice of benefit options and the related questions here. The chief financial officer will also answer the question that was posed around expenditure per program, particularly those areas in page 35, 37, and 38, in terms of the breakdown of the numbers and what was being asked here. In terms of the seventh question, which is on page 6, and basically talks to, you know, the reference in the situational analysis of our intention to improve the management of complaints, reducing backlogs, as well as improving compliance. I think, yes, this is our intention to do so. And if you look at our five-year view that we have at this stage, is that we need to increase the capacity at CMS in order to be effective and efficient in regulation currently. I'll give you an example that we are regulating 82 schemes. We've got 25 administrators, 14 managed care organizations, and more than 4,000 brokers. But when there's a problem, the people that are supposed to go and investigate are a team of no more than 8. So clearly, you know, given the scope of the work and the resources that sit with us, if we're given additional resources, we would clearly be able to accomplish this here. But I'm going to ask our general manager for complaints, adjudication, to perhaps give some indication around the specific case of MAP delay around the discovery issue, because though we are familiar with the case, I think it would serve everyone best if we also provide a detailed report regarding, you know, the complaint itself, what our findings are, and what we are recommending. But I'll allow her to just briefly sketch the difficulty and what it is that we're doing to address this. Question number 8 is basically around the budget of 5.6 and what Plan B is. I think we will allow the CFO to talk to that here. But one can just indicate that the plans that we have for the next 5 years for CMS are more ambitious. They tend to say, let us get more capacity, let's do more regulation, and we're compelled to do that because of what we see on the ground. Members and beneficiaries of schemes are unhappy, and we believe that more effort needs to be put to, you know, regulate and provide direction. But that cannot be achieved if the resources don't come our way. The tenth question was around what role we play in determining the tariffs or the charges that specialists and the various service providers charge individual scheme members. We would love to be given that authority of regulating, you know, the prices of goods and services in the healthcare sector. But currently, this is the real question that the Health Market Inquiry is trying to unravel, and we are hoping to get recommendations that will clearly indicate what our role is. That is why in that slide where we just talked about our vision in the next 5 years, we actually mentioned that we want to be key players in the establishment of a national coding authority. Because with coding, you can link a professional with a service and the way they bill, and we're able to determine whether it was a fair or an unfair, you know, process here. We have tried to act as a tariff, you know, regulator, but the courts have stopped us from doing that. And so at this stage, we're going to take our cue from the outcomes of the Health Market Inquiry. If indeed they nominate CMS to be the price regulator, we will welcome that, and we will indeed make sure that specialists don't charge what they think. Because we know that in the absence of price regulation, everybody is developing their own tariffs in their own corners, and it's that lack of coordination that we seek to address through, you know, the coding and being part of the price regulation. The difficult question of the high panel report here. I think we just want to be upfront and say that we have not looked at the report specifically. But, you know, from the issues that you just briefly outlined, we are aware that the whole issue of costs of healthcare delivery is something that we've been involved with the Health Market Inquiry since 2017, and we've made various inputs into that process. But we will indeed get hold of the report, because we're busy with our five-year plan, and we will factor that here, so that we address some of the things that are raised there that affect scheme members. I think the 12th question was also around complaints as to, in terms of why are they increasing and what is it that we're doing to mitigate against that. And then related to that also was a detailed, you know, culpability by scheme in terms of who's responsible for most complaints, etc. I'll also ask Tembi to address that. Thank you.
And then you can deal with the rest of the complaints.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. The several questions are asked around the lease and the rental. Let me start with the difference between the amounts. The other amounts, the first one in terms of the rental is that is the monthly payments that we pay towards the property. And the other is related to the operating costs, like your electricity, maintenance of the building, and all that. That is the difference. We pay monthly installments toward the occupation of the building, that is your rental, and the other relates to your maintenance, including electricity, all that on a monthly basis. The issue also related to the lease, which is a question we honorable members ask us as we come here, is whether why don't we buy as opposed to leasing? We have signed a lease agreement with an option to purchase with the current landlord for a period of 10 years. We occupied this building in 2013, and we indeed in the interim period tried to purchase the building from the landlord. We negotiated prices. The price that we were given last year was about 160 million. And in terms of our own due diligence, we did an evaluation of the building. The cost of that building in terms of our evaluators that we had were around 90,000, between 86,000 and 90,000. So in terms of what the landlord was asking and what we've evaluated in terms of our own... What did I say? Oh, 19 million. Sorry, it's late in the day. Okay. What I'm trying to say is that then there's a difference between, a very huge difference between what the landlord is asking, 160 million, and our 90, between 85 and our 90 million, which is about 70 million. And we have said that we cannot go into that ridiculous transaction because then it's fruitless, and we get into all sorts of trouble if we buy at a price much higher than what we think the market dictates. So we are stuck in this contract to about 2023. We are left with about 5 years. We are just speaking about it as we come here, and we are beginning to weigh our options leading up to the expiry of the lease. So we do not know what we'll do. We will most probably factor this in our next 5-year planning cycle so that we see exactly what needs to be done. The other question related to that, the expenditures related in the CFO unit, the major part of that expenditure is the lease. As you can see, we are paying about 11.7 million a year towards this, the rental of the, so and it's carried in that unit of the CFO because it's a support unit. But other expenses related in this unit also talks to the insurances of the goods and services. And we've also got a scheme in the organization, employee benefits, which is an insurance where we provide some benefits with regard to death benefits. If in the event our employees get dreaded, this is what you call dreaded, is they're able to get income because they're not able to work. So that amount is also carried out. It's also carried in our CFO's office. We also have an outsourced service in terms of our internal audit services, which also talks to the consulting, because that now it's a consulting, of about 1.3 million. Our internal services is outsourced to an outfit now called SABNT. We've worked through a tender, we've appointed them through a tender. And your normal audit fees conducted by the Office of the Auditor General is also carried in the CFO's office because it's a support unit. The legal fees as well. The legal fees, we get challenged every day in terms of the decisions that we make by these schemes. And I think we've outlined that in the past. sometimes we go to schemes and put schemes under curatorship, and that's also, it follows a legal process as well. So that also explains the high cost of the legal fees in our organization, because it's a litigious environment by nature, the regulatory framework. In terms of the other expenses, I think we've tried to outline the other expenses in the presentation. The expenses we try to delineate from the major expenses. I think the slide on page 19 of our presentation just explains the kind of other expenses we have referred to. The issue of the consultants. The consultants, like we've indicated, the major ones are in relation to the PMB review process. Our acting registrar has already alluded to the fact that we do not have the necessary expertise in-house, because it's a project which we must complete over a specified period of time. We cannot employ full-time employees in the organization, but we do it on an outsourced basis. But like I'm saying, our other expenses in relation to consulting is your internal audit service of about 1.3 million. And other consulting relates to consultants in respect of the systems that we use, your accounting packages, the banking services. And we also, in the human resource unit, also try to do career pathing and succession plans, and we do not have the necessary expertise in the organization. Research and monitoring also will be doing some consulting in respect of the solvency framework. We're exploring a new solvency framework as opposed to the current statutory 25% solvency framework. They're moving towards a risk-based type of solvency requirements. And other consulting fees are also in our ICT environment, where we need some expertise. So the consulting fees are not necessarily the things that we are able to do in the organization in-house with warm bodies. Of course, in other instances, like the investigation, it's also consulting. Our investigation unit has got a staff complement of about 8 people. And some of these investigations get outsourced, and therefore it talks to your consulting fees, because others will require some forensic investigation, and we do not have that capacity in-house. Invariably, they're going to be outsourced, because then we need to regulate the industry. Thank you. Or the issue of the grant versus what we need to do in terms of Plan B. Yes, it is true. We are receiving a grant from the department of about 5.5 million. It's true, we've got a small budget, but we are a public finance management entity, Schedule 3 entity. We are regulated in terms of how we can raise funds. We raise our funds in terms of our Levies Act of 2000. This is our main source of revenue in the organization. And our Plan B is to look into amending this legislation so that we can see as to what kind of other revenue sources we can get in terms of this legislation. Because until such time that this legislation does exist, and as a Schedule 3A Public Finance Management Act entity, we need to comply with all the cost containment measures as contained by Treasury regulations. And we're trying, as you are aware, there's a move towards containing costs in the country. It does not only apply to us, but government-wide and public entities. So our budget is limited. As we've indicated, our budget gets approved in concurrence with Treasury. If we do not apply what Treasury says, we'll never have a favorable outcome or a favorable approval from National Treasury. So in all material terms, we need to look into what Treasury advises us. Thank you.
I'll take the question that relates to complaints. The first one which I've noted, is asking about, it relates to the members who are choosing options that do not suit their healthcare needs, and what is it that CMS has done to ensure that members choose or select the right options. In those instances, what members have access to are brokers who market the medical scheme, and that is not the function of Council for Medical Schemes. So the role of the broker is to make sure that they understand the profile of that particular member that is joining the medical scheme. But you know that in restricted medical scheme, the brokers are not there. So it's the role of an applicant who wants to belong to a medical scheme to ensure that from a wide range of options of that medical scheme that they choose to belong to, they check what are their needs as a family or as an individual. And then they can do that, obviously, by understanding what is it that they'll be getting in exchange for the contributions that they'll be paying in order for them to belong to that particular medical scheme. But what you've noted, you'll find that, like I've explained earlier, they cannot choose a higher option that will accommodate their healthcare needs because of affordability. In some options, example, we find that there is no benefit for dental work, and then the member has a child who needs braces. In order for them to access that particular benefit, it means that they should have chosen a different option, not what they are belonging to at the time. Some of them choose those options as a result of a condition of employment where even the broker is not even in the picture. It means that it's between the employee as well as the employer. They need to go through that. They're assisted by the staff at the employers, which is doing the employee assistant programs. Others are just selecting their options at home. So basically, that's hardly the role of CMS. But what we are advocating, that's why we are advising them, that before you even choose the option, just make it your business to understand the difference from one benefit option to another. Another question related to what is it that you need to, what have you done to ensure that members understand the benefits? The office has a dedicated education and training unit that falls under stakeholder relations. They do educational drives where they go to government departments, municipalities, trade unions. They also do educational work in the radio, especially community radios, where they're advising members of medical scheme what is it that they need to do to understand the benefits. In addition to that, as an office, we didn't conduct any research, which was also a question as what is it that we have done to ensure that members read the material. There's no formal research that was done by the office, but what it did, we picked up from the trends that you receive from complaints to understand what is it, because you could see that the members was informed, but they chose not to read that particular material because there's evidence to show that it was sent to the member in this particular email address, which is also in our possession. Now, once the information is communicated, but the member choose not to read, unfortunately, there are consequences that they follow in respect to that because they may be liable for any shortfalls that was communicated to them at the time. In addition to that, we also did communication published communication guidelines just to inform the medical scheme that in order to encourage members to read the material, they just need to tone the language. They must communicate in a simple and understandable language so that members can read the material. But even if schemes have done that, it's a member's choice whether they want to be educated or not, because if they don't read, they are just making that decision on their own. We, as a regulator, cannot force them to read the material as well as the medical scheme. It's just the choice that people make. In relation to the complaint from Ms. Pillay, the pharmacist from KZN, we are aware of that particular complaint. It has been dealt with by the organization in detail. Ms. Pillay is just not happy with the outcome. It relates to fraudulent claims or irregular claims that were submitted to Discovery Health. What medical scheme did, they picked up those errors, they decided to withhold payment, they've paid members instead of paying her as a pharmacy, and they are entitled to do that. The Medical Schemes Act allows medical scheme to pay members direct instead of the service provider. What she needs to do is to chase the members for the money that has been paid for. So it's not true that we haven't done anything in respect of her complaint. She's forum shopping at the moment. She has reported us to everywhere, including the public protector. What we can do, we can provide a detailed report to the honorable members in respect to her complaint, because she's been saying that to many entities, because the decision that was made by the office is not favorable to her. Now she says that she never received any communication from the office. So our compliance and investigation unit is dealing with that particular matter, not the complaints unit. Another question related to the complaints increase. The question is, what are the reasons behind these, and what do you do to assist in ensuring that there's a reduction in the number of complaints? In the last financial year, a number of complaints related to unpaid account, and mostly emanated from two medical schemes. We had Liberty, which had financial problems, as well as ComEd medical schemes. Members' complaints are not paid as per the prescribed time frame. The Act provides that accounts must be paid for within the period of 30 days from the date of receipt. But these two medical schemes couldn't pay due to financial difficulties. What we did as an office, there's a financial supervision unit that ensures that medical schemes are financially sound. We took corrective measures. Liberty Medical Scheme amalgamated with Bonitas. We made sure that members are protected even though they are moving from Liberty. They mustn't be subjected to any underwriting. They can just be transferred without any waiting periods. And Liberty Medical Scheme was closed due to financial issues. ComEd, we did the same thing. Was put under curatorship. There were a number of irregularities that were noted by the office, as well as them not even complying with paying the account instead of the statutory time frame. But in addition to that, we had other reasons as to why complaints increase at the time. In certain instances, we find that members are still undergoing treatment, but the limits, or they've reached the limits as provided for in the rules. Some of them will require benefits that are not even provided for in terms of the benefit option that they belong to. Other complainants relate to members wanting a service that is not applicable at the time. Medical scheme introduced some protocols. Example, you just cannot access in certain options a specialist without going to the GP. GP must be a gatekeeper first, and then they'll issue a referral for you to see a specialist. You find members not even wanting to see a GP. Then they'll come to us to complain about the very same rules which are binding to them. And it's important to note that the rules of a medical scheme form the basis of a contract that the member is entered into between the medical scheme and themselves. So if the rules of the scheme say that in order for you to see a specialist, you must go to a GP first, they are bound to that. But they want the scheme to fund benefits in the way in which they want as members, not what is provided for in the rules. The last question related to which schemes are affected the most. Basically, what are the highest complaints, that is, they come from which medical schemes? We've published that information in our annual report on page 41 of the last year's annual report. The first scheme which had the highest number of complaints was SpectraMed, followed by Resolution Health. The third one was ComEd, fourth Genesis, fifth TopMed. But what we do, we benchmark them in terms of the volume of complaints compared to the size of the medical scheme itself, so that we can get the right number. So we published top 10 in respect of open medical schemes as well as the restricted medical scheme, so that information is readily available. We can send it to the House again if it's required, but we've shared it with the honorable members. In respect of the current volumes, we are doing annual report at the moment. It hasn't been published. Once it's published, clearly even the top 10 may change depending on the numbers and the volumes that you've received after the benchmarking exercise.
Honorable members, I just wanted to add one point here. Earlier on, when I presented the situational analysis and some of the areas that we want to do here, I did mention that out of the 82 schemes, we've got something like 323 options. And we readily acknowledge that with that many options, even the most educated beneficiary finds it difficult to make a rational choice in terms of what option you want to buy in a scheme. So part of what we will be presenting to the stakeholders is a framework which we believe should be used for standardization of options. We believe that schemes shouldn't be competing in terms of the number of options that they offer. We should have standard, maybe 3 or 4 options, so that every consumer, every member knows that if you belong to this option, these are your entitlements. And we simplify it in that way. They can compete on other, you know, variables, but not out of what sits as entitlements in the benefit. Because currently, I mean, it's the way they've written their option, which clearly confuses members. Most members actually discover what they are not covered for at the point of care, which is unfair on members. So we will be doing that work of standardization of the options. But obviously, it can't be something that CMS just does by itself. We'll consult with the industry and reach some consensus in terms of how we move from 3 to 3 to maybe 3 or 4 standardized options. So it's the work that we see ahead of us and part of what would constitute the policy interface with the National Department of Health. Thank you.
I just wanted to check if do you there anything that would like to raise before we...
What you started doing, because this is the last year of the strategic planning cycle for CMS, the new council has started working on a new vision going forward that includes these various areas that Dr. Cabano has talked about. We want to upscale CMS in a number of areas, including anti-fraud capability, the coding structure that we spoke about. We want to have a very strong policy unit. We want to make sure that all the entities that were there before, there was a time when CMS was the go-to place when we wanted to solve any of the issues that were in the industry. We unfortunately have lost that capability. We want to go back to that and improve and actually upscale. And we've started doing that. We've gone around talking to everyone. Tomorrow I've seen 2 schemes. We've seen about 10, I think, now. And we're talking to everyone in preparation for this new plan that we're going to work on for the next 5 years. So that we'll be able to have more detail when we come back to Parliament next time.
No, thank you very much. I would, on behalf of the committee, I want to, as you're saying, you circulate the outcome of your investigation in relation to the pharmacist that has saying she is not getting any joy from you, so that we are able to have a something which is written, and then even the honourable member will then be able to say this is what has then been your matter has been addressed. We want to thank you because we have always been hammering you in the other times about your skills development in terms of the intents that you are having in your... I hope it's not going to be only for this, your financial... Next time, or if it's possible, if you can just make a breakdown in terms of gender, race, age, so that we are really able to see that there's something, and hoping that, well, maybe something that is beyond your control, I don't know, that when their contract ends, they are then able to be absorbed somewhere because of the skills, and you are really monitoring them so that they are not just there for a year and after a year they are not employable, if that's the correct term. So I think that is we no, thank you very much. If it is possible in the next round, if you can come with the stakeholder relations person, because I know it's not your responsibility, but the tone that it depends on me if I understand or not, it's my responsibility. Can you try and see how best do you ensure, knowing very well that it's quite a complex environment where you are. Obviously, the other thing is that people are competing, it's business. You can't run away from the fact that it is then a business. And therefore, do you think that even the legislation is not assisting, the act is not assisting you to ensure that at least there are areas that, it's true, I was once, there's another year where I said I was taken aback when I went for a particular procedure, only to find that I am to pay X amount of money more. But when I went to a recent procedure, I was shocked when I got a thing that said I'm owing 164 rand. And I said, in fact, I thought I was owing. And I was like, no, ma'am, we're just informing you that your medical aid is paid. It was one of the major procedures that I had to go through. But I didn't, maybe it's because of the medical aid that I am a member of. So this thing of medical aid, it is really quite a serious challenge. And I agree with you, fraud there is ripe. Right to the core. How then do you ensure that even ourselves as members, irrespective of which medical aid, we are not active, maybe being aware or not being aware that in fact we are active in a fraudulent. One thing that I have commended, which I have observed, is that we don't go to a chemist and phone, I make an example, Dr. Min, and say, Dr. Min, I'm here, because that's what used to happen. Now, if a person goes to a chemist and say, can you phone my, for authorization, I think that has been stopped. That has been stopped. I know for a fact that has been stopped. Whether it is still, there are other people that are doing it, I don't know whether you do have a capacity to ensure that you are able to track all those processes that may really be creating a problem for you. But thank you very much. You are not as the scheme. That's why I'm requesting, if it's possible, the stakeholder relations. They're not visible out there enough for our people who become vulnerable. That's my take. But you will, when you come back, Chair and the Acting Register, we hope that time won't be in Hollywood, that somebody's acting. We want people that... But thank you very much, Chair, for the presentation. Until we meet again.